This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. This is our annual Preparing Your 2011 Income Tax Return program. This is the first time we've done for 2011, but we do this every year. And for those of you who are listening to us live, I will be giving you a phone number where you can call in and talk to CPAs off the air. My guest on this segment of the program is someone who's been a very loyal and very gracious person with his time in joining us on this program over the many years. David Hellman, who's a specialist in both tax law, estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. He's also a CPA. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies 11 fields of law: taxation law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, admiralty and maritime law, and, of course, taxation law. David, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I want to thank you very much for taking the time to come here at this very difficult time of the year for you, where you're probably working, I suppose, close to midnight every night.
Well, long hours.
Long hours. Okay. Would you do this for us? I understand in our discussion before we went on the air that the IRS has a number of bulletins for people to help them in kind of finding their way to trying to get the best they can as far as the tax law is concerned. What's available?
Right. Well, the IRS have these publications that come out multi-weekly, frankly, called IRS Tax Tips. Now, they're available on the IRS website at irs.gov, but they also have various social media tools to help people do that in the same vein. They have an app for smartphones called IRS, the number 2, and then Go. They have YouTube videos that are in English, Spanish, and American Sign Language. They have Twitter, which is from IRS News. They do some podcasts, either through iTunes or the Multimedia Center on irs.gov. And then they have widgets that people can put on their own websites that lead to certain other topics that they have put out information on.
Can someone, if someone doesn't have IRS to go or Twitter or whatever, can someone get essentially access all of these different bulletins on irs.gov?
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Right.
Because I can remember when we did this last year at the same time in March, I don't remember that there were all of these bulletins available.
Right. Well, they've started coming out with many more of them. The one that came out today that did talk about the social media is number 55 for the year so far. So they're putting out a lot of them every week. Yes.
Well, would you briefly tell us some of the specific ones that they have here so that people can realize? For example, people have had so many troubles with mortgage foreclosures or being threatened to lose your homes. I think there's even a bulletin on that. Is there not?
There is. There is one on what happens if you have debt forgiveness.
Yes.
Let's see if I can find that.
Which is a frequent thing in a foreclosure situation,
correct.
Is it not?
That or a short sale. Yes, it is. Because in those circumstances, you're doing two different transactions for tax purposes. One is you're disposing of the property. Now, if it's your personal residence and you're disposing of it actually at a gain because you paid very little, but the mortgage, you'd refinance several times, the mortgage was above what you paid for it and above your basis, then you actually would have a gain on the transaction. And if it's your residence, you may qualify for the exclusion, the $250,000 for single person or $500,000 for a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
So that may work. But if you don't, or if the gain is more than that, then you've got a tax issue there. You also have a tax issue on debt forgiveness. And there are certain exclusions under Section 108 of the Internal Revenue Code that cover that. For instance, if it has been your primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years and you haven't used this exclusion before in the last 2 years, then you can exclude up to $2 million for federal purposes, and California allows up to $500,000.
So what does that mean? What do you mean? Being able to exclude 2 million? What would that be?
Well, it would be a big mortgage that you've forgiven.
Okay, a very expensive property,
right,
obviously.
Expensive property with a lot of mortgage debt on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the mortgage debt that is forgiven in order to qualify for the exclusion has to be used either for the purchase or the reconstruction, remodeling of the home. It cannot be used for money that you pulled out to go...
To buy a yacht or something like that?
Buy a yacht or go on a trip or something else.
Right.
It has to be money used on that home.
Went into the home itself.
Went into the home itself. So and that is an issue that's coming up regularly for people. There are other exceptions, too, that come under that. If you're insolvent at the time of the debt forgiveness, then to the extent of insolvency, you're allowed to not have to report that.
And insolvent means what?
That your liabilities exceed your assets.
But you haven't gone into bankruptcy.
Correct.
So that can help you.
Yes, it can, and you have to create a balance sheet, essentially, at the time of the debt forgiveness and look at everything, including retirement plans and all the rest, as part of your assets, and then you list all the liabilities, including the mortgage that's being forgiven at the full value, not the forgiven part.
What about people who owe back taxes? What's the story there? What are they confronted with?
Well, they just came out with a new program, and they call it a Fresh Start Initiative, and it's focused primarily on people that have been unemployed for at least 30 consecutive days during last year or this current year, or if they're self-employed, have a 25% or greater decline in their business income due to the economy. So they're helping by relieving some of the penalties, cutting the parts of the penalties. And as part of this, they've made installment agreements to pay your back taxes a little easier by increasing the amount that's an automatic installment payment from $25,000 maximum up to a $50,000 maximum.
What does that mean?
Well, that's the amount of taxes that you owe.
That you owe either 25 up to a maximum of 50,000.
Well, the maximum used to be 25, now the maximum is 50.
Okay.
So they allow that. They've also
allowed that in what way?
Well, they're allowing it as an automatic installment payment agreement. So, in other words, if you have liability up to $50,000, they will automatically give you an installment payment agreement without having to provide a lot more detail. If you go over that, you have to provide the IRS on form. Typically, it's a 433F for individuals. A lot of background financial information that they then evaluate as far as whether you qualify, how much they're going to let you pay every month, and whatever.
In an installment, when they automatically permit you to have an installment agreement, for what period of time?
Normally up to 5 years.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that can be very helpful.
Yeah, it can be helpful to people that need to be able to do this, and they're worried about the IRS coming down on them. California has a similar program also.
Okay. Are you finding that there are more people, because of the overall financial difficulties that we have had nationally as well as in California, more and more people are becoming self-employed?
Yes, a lot of people are, and they're becoming consultants if they've lost their jobs in some ways, or if they were carpenters, they may go out on their own and become handyman or do something like that. A lot of people are doing that.
In your experience, and you've been a tax attorney for a good number of years and a CPA for a good number of years, do you find that people are making a lot of mistakes, that they're overlooking deductions that they might legally take?
Well, they do, and a lot of it is just because of lack of knowledge or an oversight. They miss some, if they have a business, they frequently miss certain expenditures that might be deductible. Or if they're even employed as an employee, they can frequently miss types of business expenses that are not reimbursed by their employer that are deductible.
Is there some recommendation or some guideline you might give them that you feel would help them to try to whether they do their own tax return or gather the materials together for their tax preparer?
Right.
Is there something that they can do?
Well, the IRS actually came out with one of these tax tips again that does talk about these kind of expenses for your business. So, again, look on the IRS website. That's another place to look for it.
Again, the website that you might want to look at is irs.gov. And Before we take a very brief break, I want to tell you, because David Hillman is a certified specialist in tax law. If you are looking for a specialist in any one of the 11 areas, the 11 specialties that the Board of Legal Specialization certifies, there are a couple of things that you can go to for pamphlets, free pamphlets, or if you want to find out who your certified specialist is in your geographic area, you can either call the statewide number, 415-538-2100, or you can go to the website www.californiaspecialist.org, www.californiaspecialist.org. All right, it's your legal rights. It's our Call a Lawyer night. We have several CPAs here. I want to thank them very much for being so gracious, because this is a very, very tough time for them, and I'll let you know who they are. If you would like to talk with them off the air, the number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. They are members of the California Society of CPAs San Francisco chapter. The president of the chapter is here. That's Laura Ross, and several other people, and I'll let you know who they are. But again, if you'd like to talk with them off the air this evening until 8 o'clock, 1-800-525-9917. If you have questions for my guest, David Hillman, the number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. We're doing our annual preparing your, and this year, 2011 income tax return. My guest is David Hillman, a specialist in both tax law and estate planning. He's also a CPA. For those of you who are interested, next week we are doing Call a Lawyer night, and the topic will be employment law, class action lawsuits. So, David, let's do this. What about scholarship grants? For example, today, it's really so difficult for people to afford school, afford college. It's an incredible thing. So they get a scholarship. Is that considered income?
Well, it depends.
Oh, no. All right.
It depends if you're supposed to provide services as part of what
okay.
you're doing.
Okay.
If it's just a plain scholarship so that you can go to school as an undergraduate, that's fine, unless there is a work requirement. If it's for a graduate student, usually they expect you to perform services, teaching, grading papers, whatever, and that is going to be taxable income.
The entire amount?
Usually. I mean, sometimes part of it may be deemed a true scholarship, but usually most all of that is going to be taxable.
There's something that you told me about before we went on the air, speaking of college, something about a scam involving college tax credits that the IRS is alerting people about. What's this all about?
Right. Well, there have been some promoters out there trying to convince people that they, and of course for a fee, they'll help you prepare the necessary forms, but it's a scam. That you're entitled to take tax credits for having gone to college is, you know, many, many years ago. Well, that's clearly not what the law is. And so and they're focusing on seniors and certain working families and church groups, mm-hmm. And just trying to get people to file these forms. And they get the unhappy result from the IRS that they don't qualify and don't get the money. And then, of course, they've paid money out to these people, and those people are long gone.
How is this being promoted? Is it on the Internet?
It's coming different ways. On the Internet, I believe, contact by phone, or they make a presentation to a group or something like that. So it's something that people need to be aware of. There are all kinds of tax scams that come around periodically. And one of the things people need to be aware of is that the IRS does not send you emails, you know, for these kinds of things. And so don't respond with information that somebody claims to be coming from the IRS if it's from an email. That's purely a
asking
scam.
For your Social Security
right.
number. And
they are phishing, and yeah. they will essentially steal your identity.
You've got to be very, 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 very careful. With people having lost so many jobs and people trying to make a living, perhaps being self-employed, et cetera, and they're now using a home office, what are the basic rules regarding your home office? Let's assume you have either an apartment or you still have your own home, hopefully. What are the limitations?
All right. The first is that it has to be your either your sole place of business, or if you're something like a doctor, it's where you see patients because you can't see patients somewhere else, or maybe it's where you do your record keeping because you don't have a space anywhere else to be able to do your record keeping. The area has to be used exclusively for that purpose. It can't be part-time office and part-time game room or dining room table or whatever it is. It has to be an area of the home or apartment, whatever it is.
Which is consistent with what it has been for many years.
Those rules have not changed. And for instance, if you use storage or if you have a work area, say you're a carpenter and you have a work area in the garage, that has to again be used exclusively for your business in order to be able
You can't park your car in there?
Not and use that.
If you're a carpenter, I suppose you can park your truck.
Sure. But again, the other part of the garage needs to be used as your shop if it's a shop and used exclusively just for your business. So those are the kinds of things. Normally, deductions you take and use by the square footage of the area compared to the total square footage for the house. Or if it's the garage, you add that in and take that, and then you multiply that times the various expenses that you have for the home or the apartment. Say it's the mortgage interest, the property taxes, the insurance, the utilities, the maintenance of the property, all those kinds of things you can take a percentage of.
Based on the
square footage.
The square footage fraction, whatever it is.
Right.
Or percentage, I see.
Right. The forms that allow you to do that, the home office forms, basically have you do that calculation of the square footage percentage and then do that multiplication through that form to come up with the totals that you can deduct. Now, if you're self-employed, you cannot deduct more than your net profit for that. But if you do have...
Give us an example, would you
mind? Well, if you have $5,000 of net profit and you have $7,000 of home expenses before you figure the net profit, then they only allow you to take the $5,000 to wipe it out. But you can carry the extra $2,000 over to the next year.
Ah. Does that, but do you have to continue to have your own business the next year to be able to apply that, carry over $2,500?
Yes.
Oh, you do.
You have to be able to.
Right.
You have to continue the business to be able to deduct it.
All right. Are there any major thing? I'm getting a message here. Let's see. Do I have a message here? Let me see what it is. Okay. All right. For those of you who are listening to this program live, we now have, and I'll let you know who they are, all the CPAs here. Fortunately, they were able to find this place, and so they are here, and I will let you know. Actually, at this point, I think it would be a good idea that we give you the local phone number. And for those of you who are listening to us live, we will continue this program a second half hour. And the number, right, by the way, for our call CPAs is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Six CPAs are here. They're members of the California Society of CPAs San Francisco chapter. I'm very pleased that they are here. This is a terribly difficult time for them because this is in the midst of tax preparation time. So if you have some questions, some comments, some concerns about your own tax return, please feel free to call them. No obligation whatsoever. It's a great voluntary effort on their part to be here. So it's 1-800-525-9917. If you'd like to talk to my guest, David Hellman, on the program, the number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. We're doing our annual Preparing Your Income Tax Return. My guest is David Hellman. He's a specialist in both tax law and estate planning. He's also a CPA and has his offices. You're out in, well, you're in Marin County. What's the city?
San Rafael.
San Rafael. And David has been helping us for many years now, and I thank you for being with us. And so people are quiet tonight. I guess, well, we'll see if they want to call in or if they just want to call the call a lawyer. Or not, I shouldn't say call a lawyer. It's the same number. Call a CPA number and see if we have anybody for you. What about older persons who are receiving Social Security. Is all of that taxable, or how does it work?
Social Security is taxable in part, depending upon whether or not you have other income that exceeds, generally it's $25,000. So, mm-hmm. and you add up your other income, and then you figure in the Social Security and take a look, and there's a calculation within the return that decides how much of your Social Security is taxable. The maximum portion that's taxable is 85%, mm-hmm. but the rest of it may not be taxable at all. If you only have Social Security and a few thousand dollars of interest or dividends, then you're not going to owe tax. You're not going to owe any tax at all, because you're going to be below the exclusion amount, and none of your Social Security would be included.
If you are making, though, if you're still working, you're receiving Social Security, but you're still working and you're making more than $25,000,
then 85% of the Social Security will be includable in your income.
Oh, really? I see. Well, no matter what you make, even if you make $1 million.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's something for people.
Right. That's something, you know, we don't know that may change, but
yes.
that's the way the
take
law
advantage
has been
while
for
you
a
can.
While. Well,
yeah,
it's been that way for a while.
Yeah, take advantage while you can. Energy efficient. I have not heard so much about publicizing energy efficient and getting credits. Are there still credits for energy efficient things that one might do on their homes?
There are, and there is one that expired at the end of 2011, but it is available for 2011. And that is a credit of 10% of your expenditures up to $500, and it's for things like putting in windows, although the maximum part for the windows is $200, and certain other kinds of improvements, like insulation or whatever. There is another.
But that's a maximum of $500.
Maximum of $500, and if you've used it before, then you can't use it again.
I see.
There is another credit for things like solar energy or replacing a furnace in the house with something that's more efficient. And there they allow you 30% of the cost. There mm-hmm. is no maximum amount for the credit, and it runs through 2016. So that one's still got some years left.
And so can you take, if someone does a solar energy installation and it costs $10,000, can you take that 30% or that $3,000 and deduct it on that particular tax return, or do you have to have it go into the future where you're...
Well, no, you do deduct it on the current return. Now, the credit is based on the actual costs of the materials. They do not give you a credit on the installation cost for the labor.
Oh, really? So no labor?
No labor.
Labor is not included?
Just the materials.
I see.
So
interesting.
If it's a solar roof, panels, mm-hmm. then it's for the panels, not for installing it. Mm-hmm. If it's a solar or if it's some kind of energy efficient furnace or water heater, then again it's based on the cost of the materials, not the installation costs.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, yes, you get an immediate, and it's dollar for dollar credit against your income tax. So mm-hmm. it's not a deduction, it's an actual credit against mm-hmm. the tax liability.
There used to be, you know, every once in a while when I do a bankruptcy program, we'll get a call from someone who's incurred or has received loans, very significant loans, and college kids, and they're out of college. They've been out of college for a while, and they've incurred this horrendous amount of money. And the IRS changed, or Congress changed the law so that you can't file bankruptcy anymore.
On student loans.
On student
right.
loans.
Right.
And that's still the law.
Right.
No portion whatsoever is subject to bankruptcy.
Yeah, that has
too bad.
Was changed the last time they made the major change to the bankruptcy law, and it's still there.
What other things would you like to let people know about in this first half hour? Because this is the statewide version of the program for the next few minutes, and then we will continue in the Bay Area and on the Internet at www.kalw.org for another half hour. What other remaining 4 minutes of the statewide version would you like people to know about at this point, David?
Well, if you're missing a W-2 and you cannot find it or your employer is out of business, the IRS has certain steps they want you to do. First is to contact the employer if they are available. If they're not, then you could contact the IRS And they have certain steps that they tell you to do to file your return. So that sometimes happens to people, but normally they're able to get another copy from their employer. Also, people sometimes have not kept copies of the returns they have filed, and they need that information because maybe they're trying to refinance their home and they need a copy of the tax return for the last couple of years for the mortgage. You can get a copy from the IRS by going online or calling them. They will do it for the back 3 years. If you go beyond 3 years, then you have to send them in a Form 4506. And that is a way where you can get copies of your tax returns. So people frequently need that, and this is available to them.
Do people have to pay for the copies? Do you know?
Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, depending on how much is involved and what's going on.
I see.
If you just get a basic transcript of, of your activity, you don't. If you need a copy of the actual return, you do.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I see. Very interesting. There's a question that was brought into the studio, and let me just pose this to you. Apparently, there's a program on PBS featuring a retirement expert who's been giving advice on how retired people can minimize their taxes, and he advises people to invest in both Roth IRAs and life insurance because the proceeds are tax-free. What comments do you have on that, if any?
Well, basically, that statement is true. Whether or not it provides a good basis for retirement income is a question. The Roth IRA, if you hold it for 5 years, in other words, you have to have owned an IRA. It doesn't have to be that specific one, but you've had to have had a Roth IRA for 5 years, then all of the earnings of that IRA, Roth IRA, come out tax-free. So you can, and you can draw it anytime you want.
After 5 years.
After 5 years and after you're 59 and a half. And there is no mandatory beginning age like at 70 and a half, which there is for other retirement plans.
Yes.
So that is viable and is a way to bring in money tax-free. But you do not get a tax deduction for money that you put into the Roth IRA. It's an after-tax contribution of that money.
Okay, and that's why it's eventually tax-free. Okay.
Right, and then the life insurance component, if you have life insurance other than term, so it's some kind of whole life or some other product where you actually are building up an equity in it, you can borrow from the policy tax-free up to what you've put into it less the cost of insurance. So there is a way of borrowing now. You have to repay those loans or it reduces the amount of the proceeds from the policy when the person dies. They also have interest that will accrue on that, and that eats up also the proceeds from the policy. So it is a vehicle that is structured for some people where they make sometimes either annual payments into it or they make a large upfront lump sum payment for a single payment on a premium, and then are able to borrow back parts of that if they need it. So there are tools that you can use for that.
We have come to the end of the statewide version of the program, and we will continue. It is about 7:29 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is David Hellman, a specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. He's also a certified public accountant. His offices are in Orinda. And we also have, did I say the right?
San Rafael.
I'm sorry. Sorry. San Rafael. Excuse me. Orinda's a different county, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Ways away.
San Rafael. Pardon me. Pardon me. We don't want to have people going the wrong, getting all lost. It is also our Call a CPA night. Let me tell you who we have here, and they are available, will be available for the next half hour for you to talk to. No obligation whatsoever on your part. They are members of the California Society of CPAs San Francisco chapter. That is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And by the way, before I tell you who the CPAs are, let me mention, if you'd like to talk to my guest, David Hellman, that number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134, and I welcome you to call either here on the air or to our CPAs. And our CPAs are the president of the local chapter of California Society of CPAs, Laura Ross, Angel O'Neill, Marvin Nathan, Hannah Loyola, Sanjib Gupta, and Patrick Duffy. And I'm very pleased that they are here, and I hope you take advantage of them because they are really very gracious in giving this time at this time of the year. Again, that number, 1-800-525-9917, and if you would like to talk to David Hellman, the number is 1-415-841-4134. And next week, next Wednesday, we will do our Call a Lawyer Night program. We'll have a number of attorneys here for you to talk with off the air, and the topic will be employment law, class action lawsuits, so I hope you join us for that. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KOW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone to help you in a half an hour consultation. That is an experienced attorney, and you'll pay, depending on the county, perhaps a low of $25, maybe a high of $35 for a half an hour. It's a good way to get some basic information if you're having some problem. All right. We'll start with Eleanor. Eleanor, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Hi.
So I have heard that this year taxpayers are supposed to report purchases that they've made online, and I wanted to know if that was true, and if so, what in the world specifically are you supposed to report?
What have you, may I give us an example, Eleanor, what have you purchased online?
Oh, all kinds of things.
Oh, really?
Mostly through Amazon, but,
yeah.
But you know, clothing through other places, and
okay.
Cookware, and the things people purchase online.
All right. Well, let's stay on the line. Let's see what David has to say about
all right,
this.
What
are we in trouble, David?
Well, what the California Board of Equalization would like to collect use tax on the amounts that you have spent online and not paid sales tax on. So that is one of the issues they have with Amazon and other online dealers, and California worked out a deal with Amazon to give them one more year of freedom, and then they're going to make them start collecting sales tax on their sales in California.
So for the year 2011, does Eleanor have a responsibility to declare
does.
This is how much I paid online?
Yes. And this has been the law for a long time. It's not brand new. But if you look at your California income tax form, there is a line after you calculate the income tax liability for how much you owe in state sales or use tax, and you're supposed to add that amount on. So you treat the purchases that you have made online and not paid tax on, you're supposed to figure out what the tax would have been, and you pay it then with your income tax.
I see.
And things that you have paid tax on, because some companies do add tax on.
Right, those you do not have to include. It's only the ones where you did not pay tax. So now, if you're in a business, the State Board of Equalization actually has had businesses that have over $100,000 of gross income register with them and file annually by April 15th online, and that's the only way you can file is online,
mm-hmm.
and report any sales, any purchases that you've had, and then you pay the tax at that point online. You're paying a use tax for this. So the state is trying, it's just another way of trying to collect money. Now, but this use tax has been the law for years and years. This isn't new. They're just being more efficient in enforcing it.
The percentage is what of the use tax? Equivalent to what we will
it's
pay?
It's equivalent to sales tax.
To sales tax.
It's the same. It's the same number.
Eleanor, sorry to ruin your evening.
Yeah, most people, and certainly I don't keep track, don't keep records of, you know, there's a total amount of how much of that was tax? For all these little bitty items.
Is the Board of Equalization going to come after her, Dave?
Well, they have solved that problem because based on the amount of your income, they have a table that you can just look up the amount of tax that they think you should pay, and they'll accept that as the payment, and you just add that into your taxes. If you don't have the records, you can just look it up on the table, and they'll put it in there.
Oh, right.
Do you have an income, Eleanor?
Yes.
You do? Okay. Well, there you are. There you are. I'm sorry we have ruined your evening.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank
it's
you.
It's always better to know than to be ignorant.
Well, sure. We don't want to see you behind bars.
Right.
I'm just joking, of course. Take care. Thank you very much for calling. Bye-bye. All right. The number here is 1-415-841-4134 for call. David Pressman and me, and then for our call a CPA number, it's 1-800-525-9917. Here's a call from a listener. If you have not claimed an overpayment where you had a year or years when taxes withheld exceeded your liability, can you file to apply the overpayments later in another tax year? Do you understand this?
Yes.
All right. Would you explain it to me and those of us who may be a little confused with this?
Right. It sounds like the person did not file a tax return for a year and had an overpayment in that year.
Okay.
Now, you should file if the overpayment was more than three tax years ago. However, the IRS will not give you credit for it. In California, it's 4 years. So, but if you had something within 3 years, you haven't filed a return, then you can get a refund. Or if you have a tax liability where you haven't paid it, they will actually apply it against that tax liability.
Mm-hmm.
But for instance, if you had a 2009 overpayment, you could ask that it be, and let's just say you hadn't paid or filed returns for 2009 and 10, mm-hmm. and now you're into 11. Well, you could file your 2009 return, have that refund carried forward to 2010 on the 2010 return you do, then you pick up that refund as a payment. And if there's an overpayment there, you could carry that forward into 2011. Mm-hmm. So there is a way of structuring this if mm-hmm. you have that,
mm-hmm.
but you lose it if it's more than three tax years past.
If someone has not filed tax returns in recent years, what are the consequences of that? And I'm not talking about overpaying or whatever. I think there was a bulletin that has come out from the IRS on that. Has there not recently?
Well, there are issues like that. Yes. Well, you have the liability. You're supposed to file. You will if. If the IRS knows, or California Franchise Tax Board knows that you have income and you have not filed a return, they will send you a notice asking where your mm-hmm. return is, mm-hmm. and telling you that mm-hmm. if you don't file a return, then they're going to assess you what they think you owe. And of course,
they're
not very generous in terms of itemized. They don't give you an itemized deduction. They give you standard deductions. They give mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. what exemptions they know about. Which would be just you, unless it's obvious that you're married. But they are, and then they pick up all the income that they have 1099s from,
mm-hmm.
or W-2s, mm-hmm. or Schedule K-1s from a
which they will get, which they will get from your employer,
right,
or
yeah. business investment, yeah. or wherever yeah. bank yeah. or whoever is sending you those things. So they will send you a bill essentially and list all these items, and then say, well, you know, you have the opportunity to file a return, or you owe us X.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 95% of the time, if you file a return, you don't owe them X. You owe them substantially less than X, and maybe you even get a refund.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it makes sense to file.
What would you say, with all of the experience you've had, what would be the motivation of someone not to file a tax return? They hate the IRS?
Well,
what's the general thing?
Some people are very disenfranchised with the government, and that's a reason that
they hate the government.
They hate the government and yeah. don't file. Now, the government will catch up to you and get it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have lost a lot of their records, either in a, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Some kind of a disaster,
sure.
or a house burns down, or,
yeah.
you know, the flood or something like that. Some people get sick and unable
yeah.
to do it. That happens periodically. Sometimes we end up preparing tax returns for people who have died, who who were too infirm to prepare them when they were in their last years or whatever, and so you end up catching up then.
So in other words, you're saying that if someone died, there's still the obligation to file a tax return?
Absolutely. If they had a tax liability for a prior year, then whoever takes over their estate has a responsibility to file a return.
It becomes the estate's obligation, legal obligation to pay.
Yes.
So there is no way of escaping it.
Right. You know, the only thing certain in life are death and taxes, and they keep coming. The taxes come when you're dead, too.
That's scary. That's scary. All right. Is it Zoe or Zoe?
Zoe.
Zoe, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a question about having loaned money to a business. Can you, if the loan is no longer collectible, is it a deduction, and how does it work?
That's very interesting. So you're saying that you, and you've got documentation to show that you made the loan, is that right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. All right, and the business has kind of flopped. You didn't get paid back, and you're wondering, is there anything you can do on your tax return to try to take advantage of that? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, I hope you didn't give them too much money.
No.
All right, okay. Well, if it's your own business, that's a different story. But if it is to a third party, then you are entitled to, number one, you take a deduction the year that it becomes worthless. So you have to, the IRS, if they challenge this, or the Franchise Tax Board, if they challenged it, would want evidence that it became worthless at the time that you claimed it. So that worthlessness is demonstrated either by somebody who's filed bankruptcy or... they essentially, you make a demand on them and they tell you, you know, if you keep pushing, you know, I'm unable to pay, or you keep pushing me, I will file bankruptcy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you need some proof that it's uncollectible. But then what, in terms of how you deduct it, what it is, it becomes a non-business bad debt. And non-business bad debts are deductible as short-term capital losses on Schedule D of your income tax return. So it's a short-term capital loss on Schedule D, and you're entitled to take up to $3,000 a year beyond your capital gains of capital losses. So if the overall amount of the loan is more than that and you have no capital gains, then you're limited to $3,000 in the current year but can carry forward the balance.
You can carry forward the balance even if you had loaned substantially more.
Correct.
There's no limit on how much you could have lent to whatever this business is, I presume.
Correct.
Okay. Does that help you, Zoe?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling. By the way, before we take our next call, let me just mention our number here, and we do have a few minutes left on the second half hour of Your Legal Rights. It's 1-415-841-4134, and we do have the six CPAs who are in the conference room here at KLW, and that number is 1-800-525-9917. Please take advantage of the fact they are here, members of the California Society of CPAs San Francisco chapter. I want to thank them again, Patrick Duffy, Sanjeev Gupta, Hannah Loyola, Marvin Nathan, Angel O'Neill, and Laura Ross, who's the president of the chapter, the San Francisco chapter of the California Society of CPAs. A couple of things I want to mention to you that are, I think, very important, and they're coming up in just a few days or so. One is there is, sponsored by the Office of San Mateo County Supervisor Carol Groom, a foreclosure prevention fair, which will be on Saturday, March 31st. In San Mateo from 9 to noon. So if you are facing a foreclosure, having a real problem, I suggest you might look into this. There are going to be a lot of very important, let's say, knowledgeable people there, HUD-certified housing counselors, attorneys, tax professionals, housing and economic rights advocates, and people from other organizations. So if you'd like more information about it, let me give you the number that you can call for the Housing and Economic Rights Advocates. Again, this is for the Foreclosure Prevention Fair on Saturday, March 31st in San Mateo. That number, 510 510-271-8443, 510-271-8443, extension 307. The other thing is, if you are an employer and you are concerned about the Americans with Disabilities Act, and if you are properly complying with it, there will be a free seminar. By the way, the Foreclosure Prevention Fair is, of course, free. There's a free seminar on ADA compliance, Americans with Disability Act compliance, and I've got a couple of numbers for you. One is the office of one of my guests who came on the program a few months ago to talk about the ADA, Bassem Altwal. His number is 415-310-3010, 415-310-3010. The other one is for the organization called HERA, and that is 925-556-4404, 925-556-4404. That will, by the way, be on Thursday, March 29th, a week from tomorrow, Thursday, March 29th, from 9 to 11 a.m. in Walnut Creek. So if you're interested in becoming ADA compliant with your facility and employee issues, that's something you might be interested in. All right, let's see here. Who do we have now? We've got Nancy. Oh, and a lot of people who want to talk to you. Nancy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thank you so much. This is a kind of a quick question. I have a Vanguard annuity fund. It's my retirement fund. And I take money out of it every month to pay my Visa bill because I only have that in my Social Security. And I always withhold 10% for federal and 1% for state. Mm. And I'm just wondering whether it would be better for me not to do that and just to pay, you know, whatever the taxes are at the end, you know, the end of the year. Because when I do take that, you know, state and federal out, of course, I have to take out more money, you know, out of the fund. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like if, let's say my Visa bill is $3,000. Mm-hmm. Well, if I take, you know, 11% plus the $3,000, I'm taking, you know, more money out of that fund every month. And I'm just wondering, you know, whether I should continue to do that or just take out the money I need and then just pay the taxes at the end of the year. Because I'm actually taking out more money from the fund, so it makes my income higher. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, if you wait and just pay it when you file your return by April 17th this year, you will have some kind of an underestimate payment penalty, which is the equivalent of interest at about 4% federal in California, because the federal and the state government want you to make estimated tax payments. So if you don't have it withheld, then you're supposed to make the estimate payments, in which case it's the same as, you know, you might not have to pull it out every month, but every 3 months you're going to end up having to make an estimated payment to avoid the penalty.
Mm-hmm. Well, but isn't that, I thought that you only had to do estimated payments if you made over a certain amount of money.
Well, it depends on the amount of your liability. If the total tax liability is nominal, and I think it's less than $500 California, and I believe it's $1,000 federal, then there is no estimated payment obligation, and you need to check the specific numbers. But if your liability is more than that, then you are supposed to file the estimates and make the payments.
Mm-hmm. I see. So I might as well continue doing what I'm doing then.
Right. It makes sense probably to do it if your liability's up there, because you're going to end up paying it one way or the other.
Yeah, my liability is more than $1,000. Maybe not a lot more, but it is.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck, Nancy. Thank you very much for calling.
Sure. Thank you.
Take care. All right. Our number here, we have all lines. We have one line that's still available. A lot of people want to speak to you, David. And for those of you who can't get in to speak to David, again, we have 6 CPAs who are here, ready, willing, and able to speak with you. The number is 1-800-525-9917. Michelle, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about innocent spouse. How does it work?
I'm sorry, a question about what?
Innocent spouse.
Okay. All right.
All right. What essentially what that means is that there was an income tax liability created by activities of the other spouse. The innocent spouse doesn't know about it, ends up signing a return without really examining it or understanding what's all involved with the obligations there. And the innocent spouse claim is available to try for the innocent spouse not to have liability for any unpaid taxes related to that item that was either unreported income or deductions that weren't allowable or some other kind of tax obligation that's there.
In this case, it was just not paying them.
Well, but if both spouses were aware of the liability,
then there's nobody's innocent, right?
Nobody's innocent.
Well, right, but one of us didn't. I mean, we both had our own businesses. I paid my tax. He didn't pay his.
Oh, all right. Well, wow. So.
And now we have a gigantic liability.
Ooh, wow.
Well, so there is a form, and you can apply to the IRS and see if you can avoid having to pay it, you know, that having them come after you. You know, they.
What is the form?
There is a form. There's an Internal Revenue Service form that.
What is it called?
Innocent spouse claim. So you can go online to the IRS website at irs.gov, get that form, and read the instructions and see if you qualify.
Let me ask you this, Michelle. Do you have a tax preparer helping you with your tax return?
Well, you do it with both of us.
For the both of you? You do have a tax preparer?
Yes.
Okay. And I don't want to alarm you, frankly, Michelle, but let me ask David this question. If she and her husband own their home together, and it's joint tenancy, or it is community property, which it probably is,
mm-hmm.
if, for example, she is innocent, and let's say the tax is not paid, can the IRS come and levy on the home that's community property?
Yes.
They already have.
Oh, they have? Okay, all right. Have you seen a lawyer?
Not yet.
You better, my dear. Let me give you this. I mean, you don't want to let this go too long. Let me, where are you located?
San Francisco.
Okay. Let me give you the statewide number for the Board of Legal Specialization as well as the website. I would suggest, and David, you correct me if you think I'm wrong, I think you need to... with what you are facing, get an appointment to see a certified specialist in tax law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization, and there are plenty of them in San Francisco and in the Bay Area. And that number, which I think you better take down, is 415-538-2100. Or you can go to the website to find out who the certified specialists in tax law are, www.californiaspecialist.org. I highly recommend that you do that. What do you think, David?
Right. It makes sense to see if you're going to be responsible. I mean, the issue is, as long as you stay married, you're going to have the impact of that one way or the other, but you need to deal with it.
Yeah. Good luck to you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. This is also our call of CPA night, 1-800-525-9917. We have six persons here. I'm very grateful that they would be so giving of their time, as David is. He's always been incredibly giving of his time. And I bet when we're finished, you're going back to your office to work tonight, right?
Well, probably.
Probably, yes. All right. Lewis, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, great. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, my mother receives regular payments from a long-term health insurance company to pay for her home health aid in the range of $12,000 to $15,000 a year. And I've called them and said, well, they issued the check to her and they use her social security number. And I asked them, I said, well, shouldn't you be issuing the checks and the social security numbers of their home health aides? And they said they don't do that. They send it directly to her and it's up to her to take care of it. And I guess my question is, that's a tax liability for her. And really, I guess my question is that right for them to say that they won't issue the checks to the workers, maybe because they come and go? Not her worker, but I guess maybe in their experience, workers come and go, and maybe they don't want to do that. But and also, is there an exemption for really elderly and Is there some kind of exemption for the payments that she gets from insurance company to pay her?
Generally, what comments do you have for him?
Well, generally, the reason that the insurance company is not issuing 1099s or W-2s to the workers is because they're not paying them. They're giving the money to your mother. Mm-hmm. So it's your mother's responsibility to file and take, do withholding, or unless she's paying a company, a service that's providing employees. But it's then her responsibility to be reporting the payroll, and there are forms that you have to use to do that with. So the insurance company is doing it the correct way. And there is no exclusion for elderly people. This is what it is. And whether or not this is taxable to your mother would depend on what the nature of the payment is from. Usually if it's for insurance that you've bought and you've mm-hmm. paid for it, not gotten a deduction, or it's something like long-term care insurance, and you're spending it all, then it ends up washing it out, and mm-hmm. there's no tax consequence out of it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, so it's not treated as regular income or anything?
No, but if she's spending it on the health care, then it's not going to be taxable income to her. It ends up being a wash.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Lewis. Thank you very much for calling. I think, let me see, we may have time for one more brief question. For those of you who were not able to talk to David Hillman, our CPAs are still here, 1-800-525-9917. Robert, do you have a question that you can do in half a minute?
Yes, I can.
Go ahead.
I buy overseas from England. I don't use Amazon. I use the Post. And I wonder if I have to pay taxes like if I pay taxes for Amazon. Is that right?
Yes, it's the same thing. And the Board of Equalization is very attuned to these things. And I've had clients where they've audited those kind of records where people have made big purchases overseas.
These are small purchases.
Well, it's the same issue. You still have a liability for use tax.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Sorry to ruin your evening, Robert. Thank you very much for calling. All right. I think we've come to the end of the program at this point. I want to thank you, David, very much for joining us. It's always a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, I always enjoy being here.
Thank you very much. And I also want to thank the CPAs who were here for our Call a CPA night. Next week, I want to let you know we're focusing on employment law, class action lawsuits. It's also our Call a Lawyer night. Again, the number 1-800-525-9917 if you want to jot it down. My guests will be employment law attorneys Cliff Pilepsky and Fred Alvarez. So if you have employment law questions, join us then. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Trusts and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. I thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Join us again next week for Call a Lawyer Night and Employment Law. I'm Chuck Finney.